Come right in, pull up a chair. It's time once again to gather around the gaming table with your friends at The Gaming Game. Proudly sponsored by Victory Point Games. This time around, Elliot will be reviewing the Wizard's Tower expansion to Castle Panic from Fireside Games. Jeff will be reviewing Dust Tactics from Fantasy Flight Games. We'll have news, views, our favorite gaming moments of 2011, and much more on this episode of The Gaming Game. Now here's your hosts, Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller.
Hi, I'm Jeff McAleer.
And I'm Elliot Miller.
Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, Happy New Year, man.
Yes, it is the first episode of The Gaming Gang for 2012. Woo-hoo. Yeah, okay, so much for that excitement. Same old, same old, baby.
How was your New Year?
Very, very quiet. It was. I went and made a pizza over at my mom's. We watched a movie, and I was home by about 9 o'clock.
Ah, well, the family was in Kentucky, so I spent the evening teaching myself some board games and watching Paranormal Files Factor Faked.
Oh, what? Huh? Paranormal Files Fact or Faked. Say that five times fast.
It's a sci-fi show. I hooked up the computer to the television. Had that going in the background.
It's on Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi.com.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it. Have never seen the show.
It's entertaining.
Is it? What do they tell you? It's all real or fake?
98% of the time they tell you it's fake.
Well, that's what I thought as far as UFOs. Something like 99% of them can be explained.
Yeah. It is interesting.
It's that 1%, though.
It's that 1%. It's interesting because at the beginning, they go through these videos that have gone viral on the internet.
Right.
Everybody presents a video or some information about a case, and then they pick two cases that they're going to investigate for the show. You know, some of the videos are pretty darn cool. They're all paranormal related. They go after cryptozoological.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought it was a UFO show.
No, they also talk about UFOs.
I wasn't paying attention. For some reason, when you said that, what popped in my head was that UFO show. I don't know if it's even still on History.
Ancient Aliens?
No, it was an investigative show, and it's these guys from UFO Magazine, and they all wear mirrored sunglasses. And I don't know.
My brother, dress as Men in Black?
Yeah, no, not really, but... But they do all wear these sunglasses all the time, and they take themselves so seriously as if they're going to be the ones who crack it all open, who break the whole UFO conspiracy wide open.
Dude, I have to tell you, if you ever get a chance to read some stories about black-eyed children, take a read. Look it up, because it is the creepiest damn thing.
Well, share with me. I ever read. We're in the middle of a show here. I can't jump online and...
Well, I'm just saying for future... It's just random stories. You know how like the Men in Black are random stories that pop up about either government guys or alien dudes who show up at somebody's house and tell them to stop talking about whatever UFO stuff they're talking about?
Oh, do you think that the Men in Black are aliens? I mean, are there stories like that? I don't know.
Yes. Did you ever see the Mothman
Prophecies? The one with Richard Gere?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They're in that, actually.
I don't remember that part. That was a weird movie, though. That story itself is pretty bizarre.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Okay, but tell me about these black-eyed children.
People would be, like, at their home. They'd be alone. And suddenly there's a knock at their door. Or even on their, like, apartment door, right? Uh-huh. They open the door, and there's a couple of kids standing there, ranging in ages from 8 to 14.
Come play with us.
And they're just standing there. They have their heads down, and they say, we would like to come in now. And of course, the person's like, what?
Uh-huh.
Do I know you? And it goes on like this for a minute or two until finally the person starts to freak out and is going to close the door. And then the kids look up and their eyes are completely black.
Wow.
Like in the X-Files when you would see them get those black eyes.
Well, I know what you're talking about. I didn't watch much of the X-Files, really.
Oh, the shame.
I know.
And then they say, you really want to let us in. And usually the person freaks out, slams the door, and calls the cops. the cops get there, and of course, the kids are long gone.
Are there any stories out there about somebody who actually had let them into their home?
No, not that I am aware of. So I'm assuming they ate them once they got in their house.
Yes, you really have to let us in now so we can eat your soul.
But they're always very pale, and they have these black eyes, and people are really tempted to let them in, like these kids are influencing their emotions.
Wow.
But they won't come in unless the person invites them in, which is another goofy thing.
Almost like vampirish.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But it's really creepy.
Of course, with my luck, I'd be sitting around one night drunk, and there'd be a knock on the door. And I would open it up, and I'd see these kids, and they'd be like, time to come in now. I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
Come on in here. Have a beer.
Yeah, come on.
I know you're
right. I'd be sitting there, I'd be like, fine. Hey, the f*** with those eyes?
What are those, cataracts?
The hell's wrong with you? What the hell? Is it time for the anal probe now, or is that later? Wow, that's weird. I have never heard of that before.
Yeah, so look at it. It's pretty creepy.
I'll have to check that out. Anything else cooking before we get onto the news?
Hey, I just finally saw Captain America.
Really?
I did.
What did you think?
I liked it a lot.
So did I. I thought it was probably the best superhero movie this year. I thought X-Men First Class was all right.
Yeah, actually, I liked that one too.
Only thing that kind of drove me up the wall was it seemed like every 2 minutes, the music in the background was like, dun, 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 dun. It was building up to a crescendo every few minutes. All right, please relax on the music.
You know, now that I think about it, was the guy who played Xavier the guy who plays Sherlock Holmes in that Sherlock Holmes BBC series?
No.
I could have swore that was him.
It's not. But funny that you mentioned BBC Sherlock.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
Yes, which you recommended to me, and I finally got to watch it. There's only like 3 episodes.
Right.
But it was really, really good.
And they just had a new episode premiere on the 2nd on BBC. But the actor, I can't remember his name. He's got like some weird long name like Cumberbund or...
Yes, yeah, you're right, he does.
Cuthbert Bread or whatever. And he is going to be the villain in the next Star Trek movie.
Oh, is he?
Yes, they signed him to be the villain. Now, I don't know if he's supposed to be Khan, because rumor is that Khan's going to be the villain. But yes, Sherlock is very cool. People should check that out if they haven't seen it. Yes. It's on Netflix, so
it is.
At least the first 3 episodes.
Highly recommended, especially, well, if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan.
You don't even have to be a Sherlock Holmes fan. You can just like mystery. And there's some comedy, not over-the-top comedy, but there's some funny moments to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very interesting take on what Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson would be like in a modern day setting.
Yes.
And I like the fact that, and here's an interesting side note, the actor who plays Dr. Watson is going to play Bilbo Baggins in the new Hobbit movies.
Is he?
Yes.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, he was actually on the BBC version of The Office. He played kind of the Jim character. Can't remember his name either, but I like how they, because I remember Sherlock Holmes, the Basil Rathbone, Nigel Bruce movies, and a lot of times Watson is presented kind of as a bumbler, kind of a buffoon.
Yes, exactly.
And he certainly is not presented that way in the BBC series.
No, not at all.
Very cool show. All right, so are you ready for the news?
Yeah, I am ready for the news.
Good evening, Mr. Mrs. North and South American. All the ships and clippers at sea. Let's go to press flash.
Fantasy Flight Games is now hiring. That's right. If you want to work for Fantasy Flight Games, now's your chance. They have 2 positions that are available, Associate Living Card Game Designer and Technical Writer. Ooh, Technical Writer. Do you know what those people do, Elliot?
Would you think that they're the rules writers?
Correct. Wonder why they may be looking for one of those. You can visit the Fantasy Flight Games website to find PDF documents explaining what each of the positions are. To apply for either one of those positions, you can simply submit a single Word or PDF document containing the following items. A cover letter, hey, obviously, and whatever else you'd like them to know about your application. A resume, and there is a test if you would like to be the LCG designer that has to be taken. You can submit your resume to Michael Hurley, and that's M Hurley, H-U-R-L-E-Y, at fantasyflightgames.com. You want to type the position that you're looking to apply for in the email subject line.
Huh, very interesting. You know, they have released two new FAQs for Forbidden Alchemy now.
Two?
They've revised it twice.
Now, I knew about the one. In fact,
a new revision just came out today, actually.
When we say today, we should say it is Saturday the 7th.
Oh, there you go.
You don't want to say today, somebody's listening to this on Monday, and then they think to themselves, well, wait a second, I saw that 3 days ago. What's wrong with these guys? They're asleep at the switch. I did cover that on the brand new news show. Woo, hooray. Hope everybody's enjoying that. It's Monday through Friday. Obviously, you know about it because you're listening to this show. If you listen to this show, you no doubt know about the weekday news program as well.
That's true.
I would hope. It's on the same feed.
You know, I believe I'm going to start throwing in a weekly, once a week to a day.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
We don't need your kind of humor on that show.
Well, it isn't really funny. Maybe I'll throw a crack in here or there, but it is pretty straight out just me talking about the latest news items of the day.
Do you do it like, this just in, Fantasy Flight Games has announced Forbidden Alchemy.
You've heard the show.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to talk like this. Maybe exactly. That's how I'll do it.
Yeah.
Flash!
This is for Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. Flash, this just in, AEG has announced. Have the ticker tape going in the background.
Wizards of the Coast announces the Magic the Gathering toolbox. The only
toolbox for tools?
Not for tools. Well, for tools for Magic the Gathering. Virtual tools.
Here I was thinking it's a toolbox with that's painted with a Magic the Gathering.
Magic decal, yeah. It's the only official Magic the Gathering app from Wizards of the Coast. The Magic the Gathering toolbox will be available for iPhone, iPad, and Android devices for free.
Free!
Free!
Can't beat that price.
That's right. In the Magic the Gathering toolbox app, you can track your life, build decks, research strategies, locate events, search for cards, and read articles from the daily Magic the Gathering website.
I could track my life.
Oh my god.
Hey, it says I'm going to the store now. I suppose I guess I should.
It says I'm going to buy more magic cards. Whoa. All of these features and more will be available at your fingertips on your pocket-sized device with the Toolbox app. The Magic the Gathering Toolbox app will be available for iOS devices later this month and soon after for Android devices. It's time to get more organized.
Oh, I know that. And I'm not talking about just about magic either. Well, we're on the topic of card games. AEG has two, count them, two new expansions coming. The first is the third expansion to Nightfall. And it is the coldest winter. It's scheduled for release this February. You'll receive 133 minion cards, 84 action cards, 24 draft cards, 6 moon cards, and 60 wound cards. And it will introduce a new deck building option as well. It is standalone, so that's pretty interesting as well. Eastern Europe and the former Russian states are known as the birthplace of vampires, werewolves, and many fears that have been realized in Nightfall. Face those fears and bring tactics used in generations past to fight the darkness. And the Coldest War brings you a complete all-new set of cards with special powers. And it features a full set of 6 exciting new minions.
Ooh.
The Coldest War also introduces Moon Phase cards that change the game globally. And new fully illustrated wound cards as well.
Fully illustrated,
Fully illustrated.
Just not a black card that says bite on it?
Right, so now you can actually see the burn.
Right.
You can see a huge chunk that's been torn out of you on the bite card. Also, the newest expansion to Thunderstone brings Thunderstone to a whole new level and a new world. Thunderstone Advance takes the next step forward with Thunderstone. It's fully compatible with every Thunderstone card you already own, but takes all the lessons that AEG has learned in the past 3 years and levels up the game. Thunderstone Advance does more than just a patch job, though. It brings a lot of new things to the table. New art, new mechanics, new components, and a new look. AEG is also adding a new element that the company is known for, but hasn't brought to the Thunderstone table yet. Drum roll, please. Story.
Really?
Yes. In March 2012, faced 9 new monster groups, including Thunderstone Bears, lurking in 2 challenging dungeons. You'll get to choose from 11 new heroes and 19 different village cards among the 500 cards that will be included in Thunderstone Advance. You can store all your expansions and Thunderstone Advance all within the same box. This is also going to be standalone, so it's a great introduction for new players, but also seriously levels up the challenge to Thunderstone for those veterans who are out there. It's time to ratchet up Thunderstone to an all-new level this March.
Thunderstone Advance, so are they going to call it TNA?
Yes, I will.
We'll refer to it like that from now on.
I'll just refer to it as TNA.
Sweet. Warriors and Traitors is now available.
Is it traitor as in traitor, I stabbed you in the back, or traitor as in I traded you my baseball card?
Traitor Vicks.
Gotcha.
Got it? NSKN presents Warriors and Traitors, a turn-based strategy board game set in the Dark Ages in Europe. It's a pure strategy game involving no dice and no unforeseen events. In a nutshell, it's boring.
That's exactly what was popping in my head. Whenever I hear that whole, it's coming. I know it's coming. Innovative, new, whatever. It's like, oh, it's all strategy. No luck involved. Snore fast.
Well, we'll see.
You're the one talking about it, It must have interested you somehow.
Uh-huh. Each player starts as the ruler of a small country, which he or she will grow into an empire. In Warriors and Traders, players will use actions to develop their country's technologies, production, trade and military, keeping track on the separate playmats that they have. They will also build armies to conquer new provinces and forts to defend their own, and they will harvest and trade for resources. The game can be played either in alliance or in a free-for-all system. Players will get victory points from fighting enemy players or the barbarians who populate the map, or from building forts, or from trading. The player or alliance accumulating the most victory points will win the game.
Through all strategy, no luck.
All strategy, no luck. The game ends after a maximum of 10 turns or when one or more players reach the victory conditions, depending on the number of players and the type of play.
Or if they run out of strategy.
My strategy is gone. I'm going to make some popcorn. Most game components are language independent. The playmats used to keep track of the development of countries are only in English. The info cards which help players throughout the game are printed in English, Dutch, French, and German, and the rulebook is printed in English and provided in electronic format in 6 additional languages.
I want to play it in Dutch. Well,
me
because
too.
I don't need to know what it says because it's all strategy.
That's right. It's
doesn't
all
strategy. Doesn't matter. Man. Doesn't matter.
There's no luck involved.
None.
I must break you.
Honestly, it sounds like 1,000 other games out there to be honest.
We'll see. It made me think of Civilization when it started saying, well, not the victory point thing, but fighting barbarians or enemy players on the map.
Right.
Each person had controls their own city. Yeah, we'll see.
When you said you could fight barbarians, I thought to myself, oh, so you don't have to compete with your fellow players. You don't have to have conflict with your fellow players.
Right. It's going to be just a love snore fest all around.
All right. We don't know. We haven't seen the game.
Yes, we have no idea.
I'm just picking on it. January 11th is the official release for Paizo's Pathfinder Battles Heroes and Monsters, their first big set of pre-painted minis produced in cooperation with WizKids. Because it's with WizKids, what does that tell everybody?
HeroClix?
Yeah, but how does WizKids sell everything?
Hell, I don't know.
Blind boosters.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yes, blind boosters. The Pathfinder role-playing game Combat will come to life on your tabletop with Heroes and Monsters, the debut release in the new Pathfinder Battles line. It's produced in cooperation with Paizo, and Heroes and Monsters presents an array of 40 beautifully painted miniatures perfect for use with the Pathfinder role-playing game, or really, any fantasy miniatures game. To collect those 40 figures, you'll probably have to buy about 1,000 booster packs. From the brave gnome fighter to the mighty lich, Heroes and Monsters will offer a wide range of player characters and dungeon denizens that make a perfect start to your Pathfinder Battles collection. They look cool.
Do they?
Yeah. Only thing that I hate is it's that blind booster thing.
Yep. That's one of those ones that's made for buying on eBay later in a complete set.
Or at comic conventions. You ever see all the hero clicks?
Oh, right.
that are like 25 cents at the comic cons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. Arcanum from Lo Scarabeo. Now, this game is played with a regular tarot deck.
Oh, see? Lord. Have you just been bottom feeding up for your news here?
What's wrong with tarot decks? You're insulting a whole half of the population there.
I am half the population, less than one tenth of a percent.
But
I have nothing against tarot cards. I'm just saying, okay, here's a game you can play with a tarot deck. Doesn't that mean you could play it with a regular deck of cards?
I don't think so. They're different.
Aren't there 52 cards in a tarot deck?
Oh, I don't know. They do have four suits: pentacles, chalices, swords, and wands.
I'm almost positive.
All right, well, the tarot deck's used to move the game pieces on the board. There's four noble houses that fight for power and supremacy in a medieval city, and they're named after the four tarot suits that I just mentioned. Players represent different paths for fate, and they will try to shape the destiny of these houses to best suit their goals. The game's played over 6 to 9 turns, and at every turn, each player has the opportunity to hide one, and sometimes more, cards under the board in front of him. This is called influencing the houses, and it's like a hidden bet on the house, trying to get control over it, and to play cards for their effects. Playing cards will impact, among other things, the ranking of the houses in terms of prestige. To optimize his point scoring, a good player will try to gain influence over winning houses without wasting too many cards for achieving it, and or influence houses in the lower positions with little effort. Experienced players will learn how to deceive their opponents about their real intentions. Skill, bluffing, intuition, and reading your opponent's moves are all skills required to gain victory. Skill is a required skill? Interesting. Yes.
I have the skill. I'd like you to roll, make a skill roll. Sure, Jeff. What would you like me to roll? Skill?
Roll your skill roll.
Please.
Arcanum is the first board game by the world-acclaimed tarot publisher Lo Scarabeo.
Probably
among tarot publishers, they are.
Could be.
And includes a complete set of tarot cards featuring wondrous illustrations by the artist Patrizio Evangelisti.
By an artist. That's it? That's the whole thing?
Well, I went on for 5 minutes about it. What do you want?
It just ended so abruptly, I just thought there was more.
And includes free readings by
your
friendly psychic.
Bandai releases their first expansion to the Star Trek The Next Generation deck building game.
Bum-bum.
Probably in stores right now. It's called Next Phase, and it's a standalone expansion for 2 to 4 players. It'll introduce new characters, ships, scenarios, gameplay, and more.
And more!
Elliot, would you care to do the Star Trek intro?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before. You see, I went next generation there.
Because it's the next generation deck building game. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the hammiest production of the Star Trek intro I have ever heard. The only way it would have been any hammier is if I had done it. You.
Me?
You are the captain of a small starship with a standard crew and basic weaponry. Your ship sucks. Will you use your crew's experience to improve your ship's systems or to recruit more experienced crewmen to your ship? Will you form diplomatic relationships or conquer civilizations in battle? Build your deck and explore the Star Trek universe. Comes with 3 new scenarios. Exploration, which is kind of a free-for-all. Reunification, which players play in teams, and the Borg Invasion 2, which is the co-op version. Will you survive with these new gameplay options? Will you?
I don't know.
I don't know either. But you can give your crew a boost from the 300 new cards, and you may just be able to win. Explore the next phase of Star Trek The Next Generation, the deck-building game, in stores now.
Tell you the truth, I've been looking all day, and it isn't quite available yet. They said the 6th, but it wasn't out the 6th. Today is the 7th.
You're talking about next phase or the...
Next phase, man.
Do you have the other game?
No. I was just looking to see if it was out yet, because they kept saying it's out the 6th, and it's not out yet.
Well, where were you looking?
Online.
Oh, okay.
It may be in the FLGSs. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
So, just don't know.
Don't know. I'm surprised you haven't picked this one up. I mean, the first game.
Yeah. You know.
Well, we did discuss you'd been burned previously with Star Trek cards.
I do have an entire box of Decipher decks.
Yes.
From the customizable card game.
You did mention that before. Yeah, customizable. It was collectible. That's all that means.
Right. Exactly. Oh, well. Dungeon pets. I'm sorry.
That's where I like to keep my pets.
From Czech Games Editions and Z-Man Games is now available. Become the leader of an imp family that has just started a new business, breeding and selling pets. And that's pets with a Z.
Okay. Uh-huh.
See, so it's different. Sounds simple and safe? Well, we forgot to mention that those pets are for dungeon lords. This means magical, playful, sometimes angry monsters that constantly desire attention, and at the very moment you want them to demonstrate their qualities to buyers, they are sick or they poo. Yes, poo. Sometimes you're even glad that you got rid of them. But the profit is unbelievable. Dungeon Pets is a standalone game set in the Dungeon Lords universe created in the board game of the same name. The game consists of several rounds in which the players use unusual worker placement mechanisms to prepare themselves for the uneasy task of...
cleaning dungeon pet poo?
Unusual worker placement mechanism. I'm just wondering what that means.
It's innovative.
For the uneasy task of raising creature cubs and pleasing their different needs represented by cards in order to sell them as grown scary creatures to dungeon lords. In the meantime, they also attend various contests in which they show off their pets, scoring additional points. Dungeon Pets is available at an MSRP of $64.99. Now, I own Dungeon Lords, but I gotta tell you, I have not played it yet. Even though it reminds me a lot of Dungeon Master, the PC game.
Yes.
Dungeon Keeper.
Dungeon Keeper, yeah.
Which I thought was one of my favorite PC games of all time. Dungeon Keeper 2, actually. So I picked it up and then I just haven't had a chance to ever get it out. So
any ages this game is for?
Ages 1 and up.
Embryo and up.
I don't know.
I started laughing because when you said it was $65.
Yes, I know.
I thought to myself, seriously, this does not sound like a $65 game.
I don't know, you know. We'll see. I haven't seen it. It could be made out of solid gold or something.
Are there little figures or something in it? Or do you know? Or
I don't
know. We've just seen the box so far. Yeah. That's about it. Okay. It's that time of year again. It's time to get ready to buy your Gen Con Indie badge. Keep in mind, registration is coming soon. Pre-registration for your Gen Con badge will open January 29th at noon Eastern. What, is there a problem?
January 29th? It's in freaking August, man.
It's pre-registration. This is how you get the best prices.
Yes, I know.
Jeez, that's what I'm telling people. Also, event submission begins January 13th. So there.
But will they have any submission events?
only domination. I meant dominant species.
Right, there
that's
you go.
What I meant. Yes. Prices for pre-registration for the four-day badge is $70. A one-day badge, Thursday through Saturday, is $40. Doesn't make sense to get one day, does it? The Family Fun Badge. Ooh, Elliot remembers that.
Yeah, that was a pretty good deal, actually.
For Sunday, it's $30. The Family Fun Package, which is what you recall, is $40. The Trade Day Package is $110. The Very Important Gamer Package is $540, and the Very Important Gaming Companion Badge, if you want to bring along one of your dungeon pets, is $110.
Wow.
Also, it has been announced that the RPGs are going to be moving in 2012. As Gen Con continues to grow into the newly expanded convention center, they're shifting a few things around this year and trying to consolidate the role-playing games so they aren't quite as spread out. In 2012, most RPGs will be in the JW Marriott and the Hyatt. They will all be within a block or two of each other, making it much easier to get between games. There will be some exceptions, depending on event needs and overall submission volume, but the bulk of role-playing games will be in those three hotels.
That'd be nice.
Wait a second. I thought it was the JW Marriott. Maybe it's the JW, the Marriott, and the Hyatt. I don't know. In addition, Wizards of the Coast will be hosting the majority of their RPGA and Living Forgotten Realms events in the Marriott, where True Dungeon used to be. Keep the new locations in mind as you're choosing your hotel room for 2012. And you might want to try a new hotel to keep close to the events you want to partake in.
Interesting.
Looking forward to Gen Con, Mike?
I am, but you know what? This time...
You don't want to go with me?
No, this time I want to actually play some games.
Well, that's the problem that we run into, though. Remember, there were loads of events and stuff at Gen Con that started at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, stuff like that, you know?
I didn't remember. Well, yeah. I'm sure there were.
Yeah, they had stuff at midnight that would start, or at 2 a.m. It was 24 hours. Origins wasn't like that. Usually, by the time we were leaving Origins, it had kind of cleared out quite a bit, yeah. Remember?
Origins was a good time, though.
Oh, yeah, I had a good time, yeah. Too. We wanted to go grab something to eat. And then you had to get back to the hotel. We would have ended up playing games, but it would have been later at
right.
night.
Gotcha.
And to be honest, by the time we were done running around.
Well, we were dead.
All day long. Yeah, I was ready to park my ass and have something to eat, a couple of drinks.
We did. It was a good time. I'm looking forward.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to build my Gen Con anticipation yet because I'm kind of looking forward to Origins first.
I'm not sure about Origins pre-registration. I haven't run across anything yet. Although, I have to be honest, I haven't gone to the Origins website to take a look. Yeah. But normally, we get emails from Origins telling us, you know, the latest goings on and things like that. And I haven't seen anything talking about when their pre-registration begins.
We shall see. Well, it's definitely smaller than Gen Con. So.
Yeah, definitely smaller.
And a bit of a longer drive.
A little bit from Chicago, yes. It was a little bit of a longer drive. What was it, 8 hours it took us?
I think so. It was cool, though.
Yeah, had a good time. Excellent. Anything else in the news, my friend?
Before we move out of the news, I had a question.
Yeah, what's that?
Why did the chicken cross the road?
What?
Why did the chicken cross the road?
I don't know. To get to the other side?
Well, let me tell you. Victory Point Games has just released their first game designed specifically for kids.
For yourself, you mean.
For me, which is great. It's their first game in their new Me and the Kids line. For years, we've pondered that question. Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, never fear.
There were hot roosters on the other
hot
side.
Hot rooster.
Yeah.
That was my radio name, you know, back in the 80s.
In Saskatchewan.
The VPG designer Nathan Hansen has the answer to this question. Why is a 1-5 player game featuring the perfectly normal, seemingly sane chickens running headlong into traffic, causing a massive 42-car pileup? So we ask you again, why? What could have possibly been so important? Each turn, players draw a card and follow the instructions to move their chicken and either move current cards on the board or draw new ones into a random lane. Anything can happen as you cross this dangerous road to get to the other side. It's a quick, easy-to-learn game. It's designed for children, but it is challenging for all players. And Y is available at the VPG website right now for $16.95.
And that VPG website would be victorypointgames.com. What's their tagline, Elliot?
Where the game plays the thing.
There you go. See, you scared me into going to the website now. Because now I need to know, why did those chickens cross?
Why? Why?
Maybe it's because there's hormone-injected feed on the other side. Do you think that could be it?
I just remember this Wizard of Id cartoon where they're standing there and he's standing there looking at this chicken. This chicken runs across the road and
they look at each other and say, why did the chicken cross the road? And then like a piano falls on their heads or something, you know?
Jeez. Oh, it was Farside, you said?
Wizard of Id.
Oh, jeez. Sounds more like a Farside. Well, it's funny. I have seen not the actual game itself, but I've seen some photos. The map board reminds me of the video game Frogger.
Really?
Yes. Because it's lanes of traffic and you have these cars and you have your chickens, sort of like the frog that you'd have to, you know, move across. My brother used to play the hell out of
I remember Frogger.
I never understood why. I didn't know what the appeal was.
I never understood why it wasn't a chicken.
Yeah, what's a frog doing? Right. I don't understand this. Actually, it wasn't the frog jumping on lily pads and stuff like that. It wasn't really traffic.
I don't think so. I think it was just moving across a road.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was traffic.
Oh, you know what? I wanted to mention one more thing.
Well, you have another question for me?
No. This one's a recommendation.
Ah, okay.
So I finally got a Kindle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough because...
Which isn't a true tablet.
No, it's not at all. It's for basically reading books.
But we are on Kindle now. We should mention that.
See? There you go. Yes, we're on Kindle now.
Yes, people can subscribe to the Gaming Gang website. I don't think you can get audio files, can you, on a Kindle?
Yes, you can.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe people can get the podcast, too, that way. Sure. I'm sorry, I took you off topic. You were talking about you got yourself a Kindle.
Yes. So I read this book originally in paperback. It's called The Name of the Wind. It's The King Killer Chronicles, Day One, it's called.
Okay.
And it's by Patrick Rothfuss. And I thought, and this one, I had listened to the audiobook, and I thought it was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Second book just recently came out, and it's called The Wise Man's Fear. So I've been reading this on my Kindle, and it is so good. This is a really good fantasy series. I'm really enjoying it. I highly recommend it, especially now the Kindle is just the coolest thing. The only thing I haven't figured out, because it's one of those touch ones where you got to tap the page to change it.
Yeah. On mine, I have an Android tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm reading something, be it a PDF or EPUB or whatever, you actually take your finger and you swipe it across the screen like you're flipping the page.
Yeah, this will work the same way. But you can just tap the screen. And I haven't figured it. So I'm holding it in one hand. I have it in this cover because it's not lit. So you have to have like a separate light if you're reading in the dark.
Really? Okay. It's not backlit? Yeah.
It's not backlit, no, but it looks like you're reading a sheet of paper.
Yeah, right.
Just like it. And I haven't figured out now how to tap it using just one hand. So say I'm reading in bed and I have to lift my arm up every 20 seconds to tap the page.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
I told my son Brian that I have to figure out some way to extend one of my fingers, come up with some alternate method. And he told me it's best if I get it surgically altered.
What if you worked
on really long finger
on your psychic power of telekinesis?
You know, it's funny as I tried that.
Did you? You really did, didn't you?
I did.
I'm going to make it flip the page with my mind.
Oh, it didn't work.
Why? If it had, I'm sure that would have been our lead story.
Right. Elliot, psychic abilities.
I'm done with this podcast thing. I'm going on the road. That's right. I got a show to do. Watch me flip the page of my Kindle using only the power of my mind.
I kept thinking back to that, you know, that game they have, the mind thing where you're supposed to be moving this little ball through these hoops with your mind. Remember. You haven't seen that?
No.
No, it's a toy. It's an actual toy out there. And it supposedly goes from your brain waves. I don't know how it actually works, but I've seen it in action where you put this thing on your head and it will move this ball through these hoops floating in air.
I haven't seen it, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, you know, all I need is for this gear thing to attach to my head as I'm trying to go to sleep at night and reading my book, and it'll flip the page for me.
Well, if that's the case, then why don't you just put something on your head that has like an extended piece, like a car antenna, and just have like a little swab of foam or something at the end of it and just bash that every time you need. Doink,
doink. Oh, that'd be an interesting picture.
There you go. I bet we could patent that. They have baseball caps with lights in the bill. Come on. We could come up with that. Well, since you're making that recommendation, and actually, if I may ask, what makes it such a good fantasy series?
Hell, I don't know. It's just really good.
The setting is exciting. The characters are well-rounded.
The characters are very well-rounded. And it's almost, I know you're not a big Harry Potter dude, but it reminded me a little bit of Harry Potter, because it's about this guy who, he's older now, but he's telling his life story.
Mm-hmm.
And he's this famous arcanist who is in hiding now, right? But he's telling his life story to this guy called the Chronicler.
Uh-huh.
And so he's going through his whole life, basically. But a lot of it is him spending time learning magic at this university.
Hmm.
And it's really, really entertaining.
I was going to say, I don't want people to start writing me with hate mail. I don't have anything against Harry Potter, as opposed to like the Twilight series.
No, that I've never read.
I've never read any. And I only saw the first Harry Potter movie, and I didn't even really pay that much attention to it.
Really?
I'm not. Yeah.
The movies are really good.
I'm sure if I sat down and I watched them all, I would probably really like them. I think what it was at the time I saw it, my nephew was maybe 3, uh-huh, maybe 4. He was little. And I saw it, and he was there. He was running around and all, you know, couldn't pay attention to the movie anyway.
It got much darker as the series went on.
Do understand that. Yeah.
You couldn't even see it. It was so dark.
Speaking of dark and talking about our recommendations, we've mentioned it before. I just thought I'd throw this out real quick. One of our favorite podcasts, We're Alive, A Story of Survival.
Yes.
Which is about this group of survivors fighting zombies and actually deadlier non-dead opponents. Started its third series, its third season this week. And Zune.com, which I didn't realize there was a Zune store. I guess it's for the 5 people, including my brother who own a Zune.
Right.
Ranked We're Alive as the, I want to say, 12th or 16th best podcast of 2011. So
that is such a good show.
Yeah, we're
such
not the only show. Ones digging it. A lot of people are digging it. And if you have not checked it out at zombiepodcast.com, we strongly urge you to check it out. But make sure when you're listening to it, you're either using your headphones or the kids or more sensitive listeners.
Younger and more sensitive listeners.
Aren't around.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very good. Very good. All right. So should we move on to the reviews, my friend?
I think we should. And now it's time for the Gaming Gang's game review. Let's try saying that 10 times fast.
I'm not going to try.
I'm going to be discussing the Wizard's Tower expansion to Castle Panic, as I promised.
You did?
That I would, on an earlier podcast.
A couple of shows back, I believe it was.
In my review of Castle Panic, which I thought was a lot of fun, I mentioned that it seemed like a great way to introduce the family to the concept of co-op games, because Castle Panic is easy to learn and can be quite the challenge. For the full breakdown, you can see my review or go back to our earlier podcast.
You mean read your review?
Yes, but they'll have to see it to read it. Wizard's Tower is the first expansion to Castle Panic. At the heart of the expansion is, of course, the Wizard's Tower. A wizard
has the name.
Exactly. It's just logic. A wizard has made his home in your castle, and you will be able to gain his assistance in defending the castle while an even more powerful army of monsters begin assaulting your keep. The tower itself is a cardboard stand-up that replaces one of the original ordinary towers from the base game. It's a bit bigger than the others and does have a wizardy look to it. If you recall, the object of the game is to keep at least one of your towers from being destroyed by this horde of advancing creatures. If you still have a tower standing once the final monster has been destroyed, then the players win. The players who gained the most points in monster trophies gains the title of Master Slayer. This hasn't changed in the expansion, so your goals are the same. Evil has kicked it up a notch, so you will need that wizard's abilities. There are 43 new monster tokens and 6 mega boss monsters. Instead of just goblins, orcs, and trolls, you'll also be facing centaurs, climbing trolls, conjurers, cyclops, doppelgangers, gargoyles, goblin cavalry, golems, imps, ogres, and a phoenix or two.
Woo!
That's a lot, see?
That's a mouthful.
Mm-hmm. The direct attacks from the monsters originally included only the boulder, but now you have to watch out for the flaming boulder and the trebuchet.
Not that there's anything wrong with the flaming boulder.
The Mega Boss monsters are the only tokens that differ from the original triangular shape of the monster tokens. You see, you could tell how many health points a monster token has left before it is destroyed because they're printed on the corners of the tokens. Mm-hmm. You would just rotate the token as the monster took damage. This gave each monster a range of from 1 to 3 health points. The Mega Bosses can have up to 5 health points, and so they include square and pentagon-shaped tokens. There are triangular Harbinger tokens that get thrown into the monster bag at the beginning of the game that have the names of the boss monsters printed on them. So if you pull one of these Harbinger tokens out, you replace it with the actual Mega Boss token that you have sitting next to the board. You can expect to face a dragon, a chimera, a basilisk, a hydra, a necromancer, and a warlock as your Mega Bosses.
All the Mega Bosses? Oh, okay, I guess you're going to tell me.
Yeah, you only use 3 per game, though. So
okay, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Are they all in it? It's like, well, jeez.
It adds a little variety, and it keeps the difficulty level from getting way out of hand. Speaking of the monster bag, yes, there is a monster bag included with the expansion. I love when a company adds little component upgrades to a game for no reason than just to make it a little bit cooler.
Because you're a component junkie.
Of course. And the monster bag is this black bag with a drawstring and has some monster eyes and teeth printed on it. I love this, and I really thought it was a great touch. Most of the monsters have special powers or effects that are triggered when they come onto the board. There are symbols on the tiles that let you know what these effects are. I do feel that this may have been overdone a bit, as it did increase the fiddliness of the game. I know, okay. I hate that term, but the centaur is killed if damaged in the knight ring, but it can't be hit in the archer ring. The golem is killed if it's hit in the swordsman ring, but not damaged if hit in the knight ring. The gargoyle is immune to knights and swordsmen, but can be hit by archers in those rings, and so on.
That does kind of seem a little odd.
Yeah. So it took a couple of plays to get these new rules down. There is a reference card that highlights the monster's special abilities, but I did find it slowing the game down. They do add new challenges to the game, though, and it makes sense to differentiate the monsters in some way. Otherwise, they're just the same tokens from the original game with different names.
Different names, sure.
Yeah. I guess there was no way around it, but I just wanted to make sure you're aware that it's not as simplistic as the original. I'm sure that many will find this is just what they wanted, though. As in the original, the boss monsters also have special abilities. These I had no problem with, as the originals worked in the same way. Some can breathe fire that'll start your structures on fire using the fire tokens that come with the game. And they just slip right over your little buildings.
Okay.
3 fire tokens on a structure and it's destroyed. Some of them can move differently. Some of them can summon imps onto the board.
They have like funny walks?
Right. From the Ministry of the Funny Walk.
Yes.
Some of them can summon imps onto the board, which is a special pile of 1 health point creatures that is never exhausted. If you kill one, it just goes back into the pile waiting to be summoned again. Luckily, the player also has more options to combat this powerful monster horde. Your biggest asset is the
powerful monster horde.
Horde.
Trust me, it really did sound like horde.
Watch out, man, it's the powerful monster whore.
I thought we were going to get through a review for a family game right. Without any sort of adult-natured comments, but you just couldn't do it. See, it was subliminal. It was sitting in the back of your mind. I'm telling you, when you hear this, it sounds like you say monster whore. I knew what you meant. Well, I was pretty sure I knew what you meant.
Right. That's in the next expansion. I'm sorry.
The Wizard's Brothel.
Hello. Your biggest asset is the deck of wizard cards. During the discard draw phase, you can choose to draw a card from the wizard deck, as long as the wizard's tower is still standing. These contain a lot of cards that you will really need to keep your defense intact. There are fireballs that can damage and set fire to monsters, cards that can damage multiple monsters, or can damage a creature anywhere on the board, including the forest and the castle ring, which before there were very few cards that could do that. If you let the wizard's tower be destroyed, you can no longer select cards from the wizard's deck. You will need to prevent this if at all possible.
As Please.
The game
Please do.
Yes. The game gets much harder if you lose access to these cards. Luckily, there is one wizard card that will allow you to rebuild a single tower that gets destroyed, and I advise you to hold on to that card in the event of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
The first game that we played, we squeaked by, winning the game with just the wizard's tower left standing. The second game we won easily, but we realized that we accidentally cheated.
Accidentally, yes. Eh?
Our wizard's tower was destroyed, but we forgot to stop drawing cards from the wizard's deck. So after that, we
He moved to another tower.
I'm getting out of here. So after that, we would always place the wizard's tower on top of the deck when it was destroyed to remind us that we couldn't draw from it anymore.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And our third game, we were wiped out big time.
Hmm.
I should note that by the third game, we were pretty comfortable with the rules and finished in just over an hour. I played a few solo games as well, and let me say it was not easy. I was really satisfied when I managed to pull off a win in solitaire mode. Overall, I think the Wizard's Tower is a great expansion to Castle Panic. It was nice having all the additional options, and Fireside did an excellent job taking Castle Panic to the next level. Just keep in mind that it will take you some time to get used to the new monster rules, and the game is not as simplistic as the original. I don't think I will ever go back to just playing the original game, though, unless it's just to teach new players. So, there you go, the Wizard's Tower. Very good expansion to Castle Panic.
Very nice.
Nice little panic.
Fireside has done a real nice job with what they've come out with so far, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think I pretty much enjoyed them all. I mean, Bears was okay. But.
Right, well, it is what it is. I don't know. I haven't played any of the Fireside games, but I know you've really enjoyed quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
Their whole line, except Bears, was simply, you know, it's rolling some dice, pairing them up.
Yeah,
it's just exactly. Kind of a quick, silly kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
As you began the review and you were talking about this wizard has taken up residence in one of the towers or something, I was sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, what is this guy, a squatter?
It's my tower. I'm a wizard.
And it's sort of like, oh, and he's agreed to help you out. Well, yeah, because he's glomming onto your tower there.
I'm disabled.
I'm disabled. Disabled. Okay, the joke there is, if anybody out there has ever seen the British comedy, The IT Crowd, the first episode of the second season is, I think, from the halfway point, nonstop hilarity. And I just could not stop laughing watching that episode.
I agree.
And it's, I think it's called The Company Outing is the name of the episode.
Yes.
But if people have not seen The IT Crowd, some episodes are funny but not hysterical. Others are a riot. And here's the interesting thing I was going to toss out there. If you've ever noticed, there's four seasons, but they're only six episodes each because it's British TV. I think it's in the second or third season, you see there's board games on the shelves.
Yes, I did notice that. I saw War on Terror.
Ticket to Ride,
yes.
It's like four or five, and it's over by the character Moss's desk.
Uh-huh.
And there's actually one episode where it's Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, yes, that's right. Oh, that was hilarious, too.
That was pretty funny. And the actor who plays Roy is just hysterical. And in the second episode, he's pretending he's disabled. But you have to see it. It is just a great show.
It really is.
It really is pretty funny. Another recommendation I made for Elliot, and he gives it a thumbs up too.
Oh, big time.
But anyway, enough of that sidetrack.
Yes. I would love to see a Lord of the Rings themed version. If only they could pair up with like FFG or something. Because it would be so easy to theme this game in a different way, like a Battle at Helm's Deep theme. Of course, that's a pipe dream. Oh, well. Or maybe an Evil Dead Army of Darkness medieval theme.
There you go.
I think it would be classic.
Wouldn't that take that out of the audience it's really supposed to be for?
Oh, especially maybe. Who knows?
Especially Army of Darkness. Come on.
Yo, you know what I would do? I was thinking about making my own and using the zombies that I don't use to play zombies anymore.
Uh-huh.
And just lining them up all around the board. And you could always just replace those. Just all these glowing zombies coming in from every direction.
There you go. My review for this episode is Dust Tactics Corset Revised from Fantasy Flight Games. It is designed by Paolo Parente and Oliver Zamfariscu. It was released last year in 2011. It is for 2 to 4 players, ages 10 and up. Playing time is 60 minutes or more with a retail price tag of $79.95. I have to say, one game I'd really been looking to get my hands on was Dust Tactics, mm-hmm. as I'm a nut as far as miniatures.
And come dust.
On, everybody's angel dust. Right. Yes. Not just any kind of dust, just angel dust. Everybody knows I'm a big fan of minis. I'd seen various expansions of figure releases on the FFG site and was licking my chops to tackle the title. I've mentioned before why I think games with miniatures have a big appeal for gamers of all stripes, and Dust Tactics is mighty appealing. It's important to note Dust Tactics is truly a board game utilizing miniatures as opposed to a straight-out miniature system a la War Machine, Malifaux, Warhammer, so forth. Mm-hmm. This means games play out within an hour or so, and the fighting is fast and furious. An alternate Cold War is a setting for Dust Tactics, as it's based upon the world of Dust created by Paolo Pariente. This is a world in which alien technology was discovered by both the Allies and Axis during World War II, and now they've continued the war into the late 1940s with no end in sight. I know I've mentioned before the Nazis just seem to continually be recycled as the big baddies, but given the backstory to the game and the fact that this is a continuation of World War II, I don't see it as much of an issue with
Dust Tactics.
Now
it's okay.
There's a bit of a science fiction angle, but it's not over the top. And it's not like we're talking about space Nazis in the year 2142.
They only went to the moon.
Well, they're still in space. Returning from the moon to take over the world. Why? You told me why they were coming back.
Because the moon sucks.
There you go. Because the moon sucks. Well, space Nazis have nothing to do with Dust Tactics. Upon opening the box, you'll see there are loads of figures included, as you receive one each of the opposing forces' mecha walker units, as well as 14 allied troops and a dozen Axis soldiers, all in plastic. These look to be true 28mm figures, and I could easily see there was much more detail to these figures than the smaller scale minis that came with Mansions of Madness. This will make the figures more interesting to paint, as well as making a painter's life a bit easier too. They sort of reminded me of Tamiya model figures, although a bit larger. These figures come unpainted, but are supposedly primed in a base color. They don't feel primed to me, and have a decal attached to determine what sort of unit it is. The Walker figures are very well done as well, although they do need to be assembled. If you decide to glue the Walkers together, you're going to have a hard time putting them back in the box along with the other components. And of course, you would glue them together if you plan on painting them.
Right.
The miniatures, whether they're humans or mecha, aren't completely out there, so you could easily incorporate them into any other World War II alternate timeline game you might have on the shelf or even cooking in your head. I'll mention a bit more about painting the figures a little later in the review, but let me just say the minis are mighty impressive. You also receive a rulebook, a scenario book entitled Victory Bridge, two folded terrain maps, 9 double-sided terrain tiles, 4 3D pieces of terrain cover, 6 unique combat dice, as well as unit cards and a loaded token. Loaded as in a little too much. Not that kind of loaded. The 6-sided dice have 4 faces, which are completely blank, and 2 opposing sides sporting
Does
eight.
Make it hard to figure out what you're going to roll? Well, I rolled blank again.
No, they have 2 sides that have little target receptacles on them. Those count as hits. If you roll a blank, it's a miss.
Okay,
it's a non-success.
Sorry, I thought it was completely blank.
Yes, they're all blank.
Like I missed mind. Again.
Like your mind, Elliot. As far as the dice, you have a 1 in 3 chance of rolling success on each die. Both books are nicely presented, and seeing this is a revised edition, didn't present any serious head scratchers on the first read-through. The unit cards are in full color, complete with a photograph of studio-painted units. These cards are nice size and include all the info you'll need about how many dice the unit rolls, what weapons they use, and so forth. The fold-out terrain maps, Fantasy Flight calls them posters, are nice enough, but I highly doubt they'd hold up very well to repeated play. The terrain tiles, which are made of fairly thick cardboard, seem as if they would hold up, but are pretty meh all in all. So far, we have some really sweet miniatures and unit cards, but the rest isn't too spectacular. This isn't a huge issue, as the selling point will be the figures and the gameplay, so the review is going to teeter on the gameplay, no doubt. As I pointed out earlier in the review, this is not a miniatures game. If you approach Dust Tactics as a new rule system to utilize for another range of figures, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Dust Tactics is a board game that includes miniatures for visual effect. The rules are fairly simple, and the options available to each unit on a given turn break down into taking actions, of which two are available to normal human soldiers. Each turn begins with an initiative roll in which each player rolls three dice, and the player with the most successes, those target symbols, goes first. There might be modifiers to the initiative roll, but whoever gets to go first performs actions with a particular unit, and each side alternates activating a unit for action there on out. You can move and fire, fire and move twice, or perform a sustained attack, which doesn't allow for movement, but allows one reroll for each missed die roll. That's pretty much the meat and potatoes of it all. Each unit can take one hit. Heroes and walkers are a bit tougher than the average grunt, so they take more damage, but everybody else is one hit and they're toast. Line of sight is determined by the circle located in the center of the map square or terrain tile that the units are in. Units have different weapons they can use, and depending on your target and its type of armor, you'll choose how to make your attack. Each unit card will display how many dice you're able to roll and how much damage each hit will cause. Attacks also have to be declared before dice are rolled, so you can't be sneaky and suddenly change targets if you suddenly lucked out and wiped out your initial target. There's some special weapons and abilities, but the unit card or scenario will make those clear. There are no rules for morale, so your troops will fight to the last man or woman. Walkers don't see any degradation in performance based on taking damage either. I did point out this is not a miniatures game, didn't I? A player can win if they complete their mission objective, eliminate their opponent, or score the most points based on casualties they've dished out once the number of turns of a given scenario have played out. Out of the box, I really think Dust Tactics is a lot of fun, which could appeal to a broader spectrum of players.
Yeah, it does seem like the rules are fairly simple.
They really are. I do have some issues, though. First, I think FFG is dropping the ball on how they're marketing the game and pricing your expansion of your Dust Tactics experience. With a suggested retail price of $79.95 on the core game, you receive 28 miniatures, two of which are these large mecha vehicles. So even if you throw out everything else you get in the box, you're looking at about $2.85 or so for each miniature. Yet, additional expansion figures come in packs that run from a reasonable $14.99 for five minis to a much more insane pricing of $19.99 for three hero types and $24.95 for the walkers. In fact, a recently announced heavy walker is being priced at $39.95. Seriously, wow. FFG is moving into Games Workshop territory with this pricing. No single plastic figure is worth anywhere near $7 a pop if it's just a regular human being. Is it any wonder why I simply adore Reaper Minis? I can score a quality lead figure while saving a buck or two that'll withstand the rigors of gaming a lot longer than plastic and still enjoy a highly detailed figure to paint. Honestly, Dust Tactics could be marketed as an anti-Warhammer 40K with a much more realistic price structure. I'd love to have Christian Peterson as a guest on the show and be the first to point out, I'm very familiar with Games Workshop, sir, and FFG is no Games Workshop. Dust Tactics is also nowhere in the league of a Games Workshop title in terms of complexity, depth, or popularity. Now, I'm not singing GW's song here, and I have not drank their Kool-Aid either, because I honestly think most of the people at Games Workshop are out of their mind for what they charge for their products. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see FFG go in that same kind of direction. Or in other words, I'm not going to shell out $40 on a miniature used for what's really just a board game. Dust Warfare is on the horizon, and that is supposed to make Dust Tactics a true miniatures game. But I think this may only lead to even more outrageous prices for Dust Minis. Another issue I do have is there's no morale rules. Yes, I do understand this is a board game, it's not a miniatures game, but there should be some morale. I did mention I discussed painting your Dust Tactic miniatures before I finished up the review. FFG indicates the miniatures are pre-primed. so you can just paint the figures right out of the box. As someone who's painted just about anything from 6mm to 1/6 scale made of lead, pewter, plastic, and resin, this is certainly not the case. Sure, the figures have mainly been cleaned of mold grease agents, but they are not primed. Maybe this is what they mean by pre-primed, so you don't have to wash off that greasy residue you always find on plastic figures. Mm-hmm. Each figure also has a decal attached, so if you plan on painting the minis, you're going to have to understand that decal is going to have to go. You won't miss them, though, with some creative use of Photoshop and a printer. You can easily replace the decals. Detail is certainly solid, and you'll really enjoy painting the minis included with Dust Tactics. They're really crisp, and you don't have to spend much time prepping the figures. Still wouldn't be worth $7 a mini, though.
Yeah.
Because these are 28mm, you'll find you can approach the minis in the same way as you would from just about any other manufacturer. As I pointed out earlier, the figures are top-notch. In the end, Dust Tactics really won't jump out for those who want to get into the nitty-gritty of a World War II sim or even a serious science fiction miniatures gamer. It won't appeal to serious war gamers either. Dust Tactics is a sort of game that will reel in those who will argue that Memoir 44 is a serious war game, and gamers who love a great visual presentation and still be able to play out a game in an hour or so. I have an issue with any game that in some way simulates combat between human beings that ignores morale. I don't care if there's a science fiction angle or not. Thinking humans don't simply all fight to the death.
No,
they don't. Adding some sort of morale isn't that difficult. It could be just being pinned. I'm not saying you have to have your figures all run away, all be routed and have to rally them, but let's be real here. If you're looking for a fun game with a lot of great minis that you'll want to check your bank account before you start expanding, or won't be suckered into paying top dollar for plastic figures, Dust Tactics is worth a serious look.
Actually, I might enjoy it. I don't know.
This is the problem that I had when I did my final scoring of the game, and I gave it a 7.9.
Did you?
Yeah, that's out of 10.
Not bad.
It's not bad, but it's not great. The big reason why I gave it the 7.9 is, number one, because of the morale, without the morale rules.
Yeah.
I don't think most people realize that DT, I guess we could call it, is a board game. It's advertised as a tactical miniatures board game in the world of Dust. That's their tag. So it leads some people to probably think that there's going to be more to it than actually is in it. Huh. There isn't a whole lot your units can do.
I mean,
heroes and the walkers, they have some special weapons or abilities in that, but the average unit, it's move and fire, fire and move, sustain, you know, firing where you don't move. There's not a whole lot to it.
How many scenarios does it come with?
If I remember right, I think there are 9.
Okay.
In the book, yeah, 8 or 9. Yeah, offhand, I don't recall. To be very honest, I don't. It is a scenario book, and it's about 24 pages long.
Yeah.
The scenarios are a couple of pages or 3 pages.
Gotcha.
And you could create your own scenarios. I like it. What knocked it down was there's no morale, and the fact that if you want to expand the game further, you are going to pay top dollar.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is. In my opinion, it is. And I know there are a lot of companies out there, they all sit at about that same kind of price range. Games Workshop is nuts. Now, I understand those figures are coming from the UK, so there's some additional cost involved. But when you're talking about $12 or $13 for a lead 28mm, just regular kind of human-sized figure, we're not talking like some super special equipment and extras and stuff like that. $13 for that one figure, that's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Buy 50
see
of those for my army.
There are companies out there that are making figures in resin, and I'm very familiar with resin because Elliot knows this. Listeners wouldn't. I used to paint a lot of 1/6 scale figures, superhero stuff, horror stuff, whatever, airbrush stuff. And resin's much cheaper than lead, and they're priced outrageously as well. There's some game systems out there I would love to check out and get into. There's just absolutely no way I'm willing to spend $250 just to get my foot in the door of playing it.
Right.
To me, that's just insane.
Yeah, well, I agree. I know that'd be way out of my league.
Oh, yeah. And it's not as if you're getting 100 figures or something like that for that $250.
Yeah. you almost have to pick a system and then just dedicate yourself to that one system.
Right.
Because otherwise, you're not going to get the play out of it that would make it worth it.
I'll tell you one thing, and kind of going off topic just a little bit. If people are out there who want to get into miniatures and they want to have that whole big epic kind of battle feel, look into 6mm or 10mm. It used to be the 6mm where you could barely see anything on them. I mean, granted, they're very, very easy to paint hundreds of them at a time. But I've noticed a lot of companies out there starting to make 6mm that are pretty sharp. They have a pretty good level of detail for being that small.
Yeah.
If you recall, Elliot, when we used to, I know you didn't play, but our friend Ed and I and some other people, we used to play the Warhammer 40K Epic line.
Uh-huh.
Those were 6mm.
Those are the ones that you guys had them all set up on Ed's big table?
Yep.
Oh, I do remember that. I think I did play at least one.
You may have. I know it wasn't something that you really played much of. But yes, those would be 6mm. And the detail in those for the like the actual human figures or even the aliens, but just the regular trooper, wasn't real great. And of course, those weren't very cheap either. But 6mm is a great introduction to get into miniatures, see if you like them, and then go from there.
Yeah.
Or something like I said, the core set for Dust Tactics, it's a good deal for the figures that you're getting. It's just once you decide, hey, oh, we like this game, we want to buy some more stuff, be prepared to see some prices that are make you look twice.
And now it's time for Thoughts on Gaming. With your hosts, Jeff and Elliot. And now, let's look back at 2011 as Jeff and I talk about some of our favorite gaming experiences of the year.
Are you doing, is it supposed to be like the Wayne's World
yes.
thing? Okay, all right, like flashbacks.
Right.
I thought that's what you were doing.
True.
That's why I just wanted to check. We are going to have our top games of the year on our next show. What we're going to do is we'll have our three top games each, and then Elliot and I will each select our favorite game of the past year. But we thought it would be kind of fun just to reminisce a little bit about some of our favorite experiences we had in 2011 as far as what we did gaming or conventions and so forth. I'm sure for some folks, you'll be like, okay, I'm tuning out now.
Right.
But we thought it would be good for a game.
Should be interesting as I can't remember anything, but we'll see how it goes.
So we don't do any kind of top 10 lists or top 5 lists or anything like that. But Elliot, what is one of your favorite gaming experiences from the past?
Well, there are several involving this one game. I have to say, all the times that I played Twilight Struggle this past year, I had such a good time playing that game. I can't remember if it was 2011 that we actually played it for the first time, but it was close to it if it wasn't.
I don't know if 2011 was the first time you and I both played against each other. It may have been. It's possible that it was.
But that is such a good game. And we had a blast. We would really get into this. I'm like, oh, man. It's one of those games that you really get into. And it's very cool.
Yeah.
And it's got such a historical feel to it.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've yet to beat you.
I wasn't going to say that.
I've beaten everyone else.
Well, our last one was a tie because I accidentally cheated, and I didn't mean to.
I don't know about this accidentally cheating thing you keep bringing up.
Well, you know, the card.
God, that we didn't get that wizard anymore because he was dead.
We've been up for what, 20 hours? We had a couple of drinks in us. And I forgot that you only get this many points per round card was sitting there on the corner of the table for that round. So that blew that whole game out, you know?
It's funny that you mentioned Twilight Struggle because, of course, yes, obviously, I always enjoy playing Twilight Struggle against you. One of my favorite moments this past year, one of the people I game with, Louis, his son, who I want to say is about 16, they have the game. They have Twilight Struggle. And it was out of print. Now it's back in print. So if you don't have Twilight Struggle, folks, get out there and get it from GMT. Because there is a reason why it's always rotating in the top three games on Board Game Geek. It is that good. And it was funny. I, you know, taught him how to play. You can teach somebody how to play Twilight Struggle in about 5 minutes. It doesn't take that much time to learn the basics of the game. So he's the U.S., I'm playing the Russians, and he just thinks he has me on the ropes, and I'm going down, and this is going to be the end-all, be-all, and I just smoked him mid-war. I smoked him like a cheap cigar. In fact, it was funny. I should have paid a little closer attention. I could have actually knocked him out in the third turn, because the game runs 10 turns for those who haven't played. I could have knocked him out in the third turn, and I completely zoned on that, but I ended up winning the game in the fifth turn. So I thought that was pretty funny. I always enjoy beating someone who thinks that they've just got me on the ropes.
It's true. It's always more fun that way. And I had my first loss to my son.
Which he always beats you and stuff.
That kid. Brian, and I played the Soviets that game, and I gotta admit, it is tough being the Soviets. It's a different feel than playing the Americans. You know, there's a whole different set of strategies that you have to have in your mind. So that was my first experience as playing as a Soviet, and it was a good game, but you know, he killed me in the end.
I've learned a few things from playing since you and I have played that I will be more than happy to utilize the next time we play. The reality is the game supposedly plays out early on. The Soviets have the advantage. The mid-war, it's pretty even. And then the end war, the Cold War, it's the U.S. who has the advantage.
All right.
But you can turn the tables on that.
Yeah, we shall see, my friend. We shall see.
Yes. I would say one of my top experiences this year was going to Origins for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. We had a really good time. It was the first time we had actually gone to a show, the two of us together, and interviewed people. I had done interviews at ConSimWorld that had been before that here in Arizona, but I had a lot of fun. I really think the interviews that we did, where it was the two of us together talking to people, were a blast. And it seemed like many of the people we talked to in the industry had a good time talking with us on mic.
Yeah.
I was very surprised. I was pleasantly surprised, I should say, that we didn't come across as just a couple of complete jamokes.
No, it's true. I thought we were getting pretty good there.
Yeah, I think we did. I think we did even better at Gen Con.
Yeah.
And next Origins, we'll do better.
So they'll be coming to us. We'll set up a booth somewhere. See, you're
come talk to us
3:45 p.m. on Thursday,
and then we won't show
right.
up. Yeah, that's what we'll do. Here, I have an idea. We'll keep telling somebody to come back the next morning and then not be there every morning. Yeah, that's good.
Way to never have any of your games appear on our website
or very rarely be mentioned. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're not naming any names, but if you notice, I think the company, and they have a lot of games, has all of one or two reviews our website. That's what you get for not being nice to us.
And by nice, we just mean by being nice, not like giving us things or sitting on talking with us for a few minutes, chatting and having a good time.
I'm not even saying being nice. People could be in an interview with us and just say, yeah, okay, here's the answer, here's the answer, here's the answer to your questions, but be professional enough and have some respect for our time.
Yeah, right. I mean, we spent a lot of time running around there.
And it's not as if we're going there to promote ourselves. We're trying to help promote these companies. And I have to say, that's the only company that we've ever had an issue with, either Origins or Gen Con or interviewing through Skype or anything like that. This one company is the only one we've ever had an issue with, because everybody else understands these guys want to help get the word out about our games to the public.
Yeah.
It's not like we're saying, hey, man, do you think you could loan me $20? Hey, you want to pay us for this review? No.
My other big gaming experience, another one that I was thinking of, was at the Miller Gaming Weekend, I got a chance to play Arkham Horror again, which I don't get as much chance to play Arkham Horror as.
Oh, man, that game is just, it's all you talk about. Is that all you do?
It's got like 8 expansions. I mean, come on.
It's all you do is you sit around all day thinking about how can I play Arkham Horror? When's the next time I get to play? It's either that or sitting there going, I just don't understand these rules, the Forbidden Alchemy. I just don't understand.
It's funny because Mansions of Madness is one of my other favorite
which you will soon be enjoying those painted miniatures.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Yes. But we did play Arkham Horror late at night, which can be bad because you know, it's a couple of hours right there. But we did stick it out, and it was a great time like we always do have. We barely defeated the goo at the end in the final climactic battle, and it was cool. You know, the Miller Family Gaming Weekend always gets in that game of Arkham Horror, and pow, it was good.
I've yet to actually have an opportunity to play that with you.
Yeah, you're right. Not this version. We played the old version.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I hated that. Yeah, I hated that. The one that had almost like the little paperclip things that would... Yeah, I don't recall enjoying that game. I don't know, but you got to remember, that was back, I was running Call of Cthulhu two or three times a week. You kept
worshiping him at night.
What do you mean at night? It was 24/7, man. Yeah, even to school. Chanting in the hallways. What religion is Jeff? Of course, this edition now, this version now, is completely different than that old Chaosium one. I would say another one of my favorite experiences this past year was at Origins, and Elliot and I had a few beers.
Yes.
We were in the hotel room, and we played Harry's Grand Slam Baseball.
Yes, that was a good time.
Which is a very, very simple baseball card game from out of the box. And just the game itself, it's a fun little game. It's certainly no simulation of baseball or anything like that. But just the commentary and the play-by-play we were making up as we went along.
We threw in our own commentary and play-by-play actions. Oh, and it was hilarious.
It was. It was just a riot. I wish we actually had recorded that somehow. Not that we'd be able to share it, really, because there was some pretty spicy language in there. But there was just, it was a good time. It was a lot of fun.
That reminds me of when we played Nuclear War with Bob.
Yes, with our friend Bob Urbina.
I had a blast playing Nuclear War with Bob, mostly because we laughed and we joked and we harassed Bob.
Because he just couldn't figure it out.
Constantly, as we're hurling missiles back and forth across it, and he'd be like, okay, how about this? I'm like, well, you just fired a missile into a missile.
His issue was he couldn't get past the whole thing where you had to have a delivery system and a warhead. You couldn't have a delivery system followed by a delivery system.
It wasn't that complex, and we harassed him endlessly, mercilessly, as only guys can do.
Yes, guys who've known each other for decades. Yes, that was a pretty entertaining evening. And I believe that was the first time we had ever gamed with our friend Bob.
I believe it was.
And if I remember correctly, he said something along the lines of, you guys have been doing this for how many years and you've never invited me?
That's right. And then he moved to Reno, you know?
He enjoyed it so much, he left the state and moved 1,500 miles away from you.
Yeah, that happens to most people I game with.
Yeah, exactly. I did.
See?
Hey, I might be back one day.
You just like Frosty.
Never know.
I'll be back again someday.
Another thing I really enjoyed about 2011 was all the people that we had the opportunity to meet at all the conventions we went to.
Yes.
I found for the most part that the people who are creating these games that we love to play and many games that we had never heard of, they're just like you and I. They're gamers. They enjoy kicking back, having fun, kidding around.
Yeah.
Because at that point in time, granted, when Gen Con ran around, more people knew about us. And we were starting to get emails from companies saying, hey, we want you guys to stop by. When we went to Origins, there weren't a whole lot of people who knew who we were.
No, not at all. You're who?
Yeah. Who the hell are you? But we did have our business cards. We had our Gaming Gang shirts, our polo shirts, and everything. So we came prepared, and we had professional equipment with us, too. So it wasn't as if we suddenly came out of the blue. And we're like, hey, do you want to talk into my cassette recorder here?
Right. Here, my phone can record. Can you hold on?
And we've created some really nice relationships within the industry due to being at the different conventions.
I had a blast when we sat there and we played Bug Out with Leah Sugar from Out of the Box. We just sit there, doop, doop,
yes. And interviewed Steve Bonacor over at Stronghold Games. And he told us he listens to the show all the time.
He's such a good guy.
He was a lot of fun to talk to.
And of course, I have to mention Pelestrations.
Ha.
So we had a big family gathering with my in-laws.
Ha. Is there a reason? Is that the name of the game? Pelestrations. Ha. It's the new expansion. It's funnier than the first.
We had a big family gathering with my in-laws and all of my kids, and we had a blast playing Telestrations. We had a full group, and there were just times that we would just explode laughing when we're revealing all our drawings at the end to see what we came up with. I can't remember the last time we had a blast, you know, everybody getting together and having such a blast playing a game. My wife's parents even got into it, and as far as I know, they never ever play board games.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's kind of interesting. Granted, I don't know your in-laws mm-hmm. that well. I've met them a few times. They would strike me as people who would be open to
it was hard to get them to actually sit down and play. Really, with Telestrations, y'all just sit. We all sat on the couch, on the floor. You know, you sit in a big circle.
You almost said sit in a
you
pile.
Sit in a big dog pile. And after we went through one round, they really started getting into it. They're trying to make all these little drawings. And Telestrations is a lot of fun to play in a nice little group. And it was a blast. Big recommendation there.
Nice. I think one of the other things that I really feel is a highlight of 2011 is getting to meet a lot of the guys involved with Victory Point Games at
that's
World
one thing
Expo.
I didn't get to do.
I keep telling you, you want to go this year, you got a crash pad. You got some place to stay. You just have to make it out here. Had a lot of fun. Once again, that was the first convention I went to that I was representing any sort of media at all. And nobody knew me. I had never met any of these folks. I had talked to Alan Emmerich maybe once or twice on the phone prior to that. And I thought it was hysterical. I walked up and it's interesting because ConSim World, it is a small convention. It's Wargamers. Although I saw a lot of people playing other stuff too. Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. And so forth. It's a gamers convention. There's no huge dealer area or exhibitor area. There were like five companies there. And I walked in, the exhibitor room was open, and I started talking to, I can't recall exactly who it was. It may have been Herman Luttman, to be very honest with you. All of a sudden, I hear somebody say, "Is that Jeff McAleer from the Gaming Gang?" And I'm thinking, who the hell would know me?
Right.
You know? And it was Terry Coleman, who has now left to go work for another company. But he's like, "I would recognize your voice anywhere." And everybody took me under their wing and everybody was so nice. And I'd hang out with them and play different games with them. I did the series of interviews. It's actually in one of our top downloaded podcasts, the special about Victory Point Games, and would go out and have dinner and everything. It was just a really fun time. And I would say out of the conventions that we got to attend this year, it was the one that was more low-key, kind of kickback, had time to do some gaming. So I really enjoyed my time that I spent at ConSim World Expo. I'll be back again this year. So if anybody's in the area, in the Phoenix area, or if they're going to be in the Phoenix area and they're into war games, definitely check out ConSim World Expo
because
it's
a
good time. This year, ConSim Expo will start on June 25th. And if memory serves me, it runs all week long. Monday is sort of an open day, and Tuesday is like a pre-registration day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it does run all week. And I believe they've pushed it back. If I remember correctly, last year, some people had some issues because of their kids still being in school or having graduations that they had to attend.
Hmm. I think they moved Origins up, didn't they?
They did. They moved Origins up because they moved Gen Con up.
Right.
And I know a lot of people were not happy.
No, they weren't.
I think we had mentioned this on one of the podcasts. In fact, I think it was the podcast we were talking about Origins, that it was kind of surprising to find out how many people in the industry, not in the hobby, but in the industry, work in education.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of people now, it's from May 30th to June 3rd this year. So a lot of kids will still be in school, actually.
And then hasn't Gen Con been moved up into July?
August 16th through 19th.
Oh. When was it last year? I thought it was...
I think it was like a week later or something.
It wasn't that late? No, I guess maybe it was. Interesting.
Very interesting.
If I remember correctly, didn't Gen Con just recently announce that they're going to stay in Indy for another 10 years? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Even if the city is destroyed.
Even if Mothra decides to make a home of it. It's actually Gamera. but that's okay.
Gamera?
In the Japanese version, yes, it's Gamera. It's not Gamera. It's only in the
All
English
I know is when I see the
dubs.
Old dubbed Japanese kids running away screaming, they're always going, Gamera! Godzilla!
Godzilla! Which I believe in Japanese is something like Gahia. You should check out. I think there's three of them. There might be more. I don't know. But I believe there's three Gamera movies. No. That were made around,
really?
They started like around 2000. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been tons of Godzilla movies that people have never seen here in the U.S.
Yeah, I'm sure there was. Godzilla was pretty popular over there.
And then they killed him off. But supposedly Godzilla's coming back, I think, in the next couple of years. Like I said, I think there's three of them. There might be more. And you'd be amazed.
Really?
They're pretty good. Yep. The special effects are pretty good for being giant monster movies from Japan. And with Gamera, he's smaller. So he's only, I don't know, like 8 stories tall or 10 stories tall. So the detail of the miniatures that they smash apart are much higher than in like Godzilla. Godzilla's right. Huge. He's knocking buildings over.
Right,
you should check it out. Even if you go to YouTube or something, if I remember correctly, when the first of the new series came out, Roger Ebert gave it like three or three and a half stars.
Huh. Well, then yes. I will have to check it out.
Hey, I'm always throwing stuff out there that you've never heard of. All right. Well, I think that should be about it for this time around. I want to just remind everybody that the Daily Dope, our weekday news show, will be back on Tuesday. I'm not doing one on Monday because, of course, this is when the podcast comes out. Definitely continue listening to that. We will be back in a couple of weeks, and we will have our top games of 2011.
Yes. Cool.
All right, Elliot, take us out.
You've been listening to the Gaming Gang Podcast with Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller. If you'd like to know more about the topics or games we discussed in this episode, please visit our website at www.thegaminggang.com. If you would like to have your opinion heard or have a gaming issue you'd like us to discuss on a future podcast, you can visit the Gaming Gang Guild on BoardGameGeek or call us at 480-779-7365 and leave a message. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please rate us on iTunes. Some of the games discussed on our show were provided to the Gaming Gang in the form of review copies. On behalf of everyone here at the Gaming Gang, thanks for listening.